You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Oh, we're just getting a glimpse of the kinder, gentler Dave Wyman during the break there. The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, made to chill. Let's bring Paul Moyer in here. He knows the delicate side of Dave Wyman better than anybody. Our buddy Paul Moyer, who you hear on the Seahawks broadcast, pregame, halftime, postgame show, and becoming a listener favorite here with us. Paul, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. I'm actually in Texas this week and visiting the family. Very different. The world's a little more open here. The bars and the restaurants, about a 25% capacity, and it's different. But behind the scenes, you're telling me there's a kinder, gentler Dave Wyman?
That was sarcasm. He was showing his callous nature during the break.
I'll tell you about it later, Paul.
Thank you. I was like, wait, he's gotten grumpier since I've known him, so I needed to find out if this was true or not.
Yeah, it was sorry.
Good.
Hang on, Paul. They just all disconnected here.
Okay. It's not me, though, right?
No, it's not you. But I'll just ask you a question here. Seahawks were offering running back Devontae Freeman a one-year, $4 million contract. What do you think?
Well, look, I always say age is not a friend of a player and a team. But I think if it's true and he signed, I think it'd be a great sign for the Seahawks, mainly because, Penny coming off, ACL probably won't be ready for the opener. We have not had what I call a true guy who can come out of the backfield in passing situations, third down situations, and run an option route on linebackers, mismatches. And what an option route means is he's coming out of the backfield. He goes straight at the linebacker or safety, and he has the option. He can go inside or outside, and the quarterback gets to read that. And I think Freeman's one of the best in the business at that. Now, he's not the guy he was 3 or 4 years ago in the running game, but, he'd be a great mix-up guy with Carson. A veteran guy that I still think has some legs in him. I think it'd be a great signing for him, and they certainly can afford him.
So what do you think this says about the situation with Rashad Penny? Because we're seeing a bunch of videos going around about how his rehab seems to be going well, but do you think this says something about how maybe he won't be ready for the start of the season? They're just kind of looking for someone to back up Chris Carson.
Yeah, I think it's both ends. I think you have two guys that they're worried about. I think, come a hip surgery with Carson, and all indications are it looks good. But you also have Penny, who had a late ACL injury, and, those just take time. So now you've got your two top running backs who are both coming off of, surgery, and are they going to be completely ready in the amount of times that we run the football? I just don't think you can take that chance. I think you have to bring a veteran guy in. And, we talked about Lynch at one point, but if they can get Freeman, who is a legit running back, he's small. He's not a real big guy, but that's why I say it's very different from what Chris Carson would bring. But, man, you could put him in second down, third down situations and give an outlet and another option for Russell Wilson. I would love it. I truly, that's one thing Russell's never really had is that, okay, who's my check down back that could take it to the distance or make a guy miss and get us a first down? And Freeman, I think, has that capability.
Okay, so there's other names that reporters are kind of throwing out there, someone like a Carlos Hyde or maybe even a reunion with Marshawn Lynch. What do you think? They'd probably be cheaper options than Devontae Freeman since he's offered $4 million. And people are saying maybe Carlos Hyde more at the minimum, and of course Marshawn Lynch. Would the Seahawks be better off going with a cheaper option like those two, or would you prefer Devontae Freeman?
Well, I can only pick one. I would love to have Freeman. I just think he's such a he's a player we just don't have. And again, it's more in the passing game. But at the same time, look, he's been used to, again, I got to go back 3 years ago when he was really in his prime. where he could carry the ball 20, 25 times, but he's not a real big back. I mean, you wouldn't want to put that load on him. You know, I think we already have guys. You know, I can get a Hyde. I can get a Marshawn Lynch. And don't get me wrong. I don't want to discount those guys because I think they could be, you know, an 8 to 12, 15 carry guy to mix it up. But if I only have one choice, man, I'm taking Freeman. It's just a weapon in the passing game we don't have.
Hey, Paul, it's Maura. DJ is still trying to get guys back on the board here. We're having some issues.
I'll be honest. This might be the best show you guys have had at this time slot in a long time.
Oh, well, that's kind of you to say about me. I don't know. But I know you're also taking shots at the guys.
No, it's all about you.
So we talked to Mark Schlereth yesterday, and we also spoke to Joe Thomas last week about the fact that there might be four new starting offensive linemen when we start the season if B.J. Finney takes over. Because you can't even really consider Joey Hunt the starter last year, but he did step into that role. So if B.J. Yep. Finney takes over at center, four new offensive linemen. You know, I heard Omar Ruiz from NFL Network last week saying that everyone should be excited that they're trying to do a more up-tempo offense this year, and the Let Russ Cook people are getting excited that he's going to air it out more. And it sounded, talking to Mark Schlereth and Joe Thomas, like that might not be possible with that much turnover on offensive line and a possibly shortened offseason. Do you think that they're going to have to pretty much stick to the offense that they run?
Well, I think the guys they've got, you know, they're veteran guys. You know, we will be a better offensive line next year, purely just off of depth. And I think when we start competing through all of this, I think there's some young guys that are going to make some noise too. And I'm excited about to see what they ultimately put out with those five guys. I'll say this about the up-tempo thing. I go back, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I remember one year, you know, ground Chuck with Chuck Knox, he decided that we were going to run a bit of the run and shoot, a very up-tempo offense. And we practiced it the whole offseason, all through summer. And after two games, we scrapped it. He just said, that's not who we are. It's not our personality. And we can mix that in a little bit, but we actually tried to make that our offense. And we lost, I think, our first two games, and the offense was just anemic at that point. And Chuck said, look, we're going back to what we do. We run the football. We play action. That doesn't mean we can't incorporate some of these other, you know, formations and skill sets. But that's just not our personality. And I look at the Seahawks the same way. They still have a personality. That doesn't mean that they can't turn the reins over or – you know, the whole Russell Wilson, is it Cook? I always mess it up because Dave Wyman are old. But look, I'm fine with letting Russell get up there and dictate tempo and being able to check at the line. I think he's smart enough. He's a veteran guy enough. And I think they trust him enough to incorporate that. But we're never going to get away from this is who we are. We're a physical football team. We're still going to run it. We're going to take this thing into the fourth quarter for the most part. But, you know, that's okay. We can incorporate a little bit of this up-tempo offense that they're all talking about. And I think they believe that Russell does perform well there. But it's never going to be our personality.
Yeah, I would have to agree. And I would think that while the offensive line is getting acclimated, they're probably not going to make any drastic changes to start off the season. But we do have some news coming out last night that Josh Gordon posted a video of himself working out here in the Seattle area. Mike Florio is reporting that he is going to apply for reinstatement. Would you welcome him back to the Seahawks?
Absolutely. Look, there's two sides for Josh Gordon. There's the him being a teammate and a football player, and I think he excels in all of those. He's never been a problem. I think the players love him. The coaches love him. His athletic ability, his skill set is off the charts. I mean, you put him with DK Metcalf, it's a problem for defenses. I mean, you worry about that. You have to game plan and say, okay, those two guys, we've got to figure out. Now, there's the personal side that you're just pulling for the guy. I mean, he's just, you know, it's a disease, it's a sickness, whatever it is. You know, you pull for him. You want him to succeed. And I think, you know, Roger Goodell feels the same way also. He doesn't give life sentences to these guys when they make mistakes. He's there for them. And I think there's enough been talked about with Josh Gordon, even Roger Goodell, that he's pulling for him. So, yes, I would love to have him back because I think some of the things that he's probably been suspended for may not be actually a violation moving forward. But, yeah, I wish nothing but the best for him, and I would love to have him on our team.
All right. Well, since we don't have the guys back, I know this is something that Wyman wanted to talk to you about. When we spoke to Mark Schlereth yesterday, he kind of tried to explain something Bruce Irvin was saying with if you're in the base defense more often, he believes that it gives you less chances to run the pass, rush the passer. And Dave's not so sure about that. And I'm not sure that Mark Schlereth's answer really swayed him. So I want to play it for you and get your opinion on it.
We want to keep KJ Wright off the, you know, off the ball. They want him to be an off the ball linebacker. So they'll get into those 50 fronts and they'll play a lot of like a 57 front. So Will on the ball with the linebacker off the ball. So that does two things for you. That's the majority of what they're in up front. Well, the two things that does is that puts your defensive end on the side of that Sam linebacker, which is KJ Wright. That puts him head up over the tight end, which is a it's not an advantageous place to rush the passer because you got to get through the tight end. You're going to be encumbered there, and then the tackle is going to get to you. And on the opposite side, when KJ Wright's on the ball, and they like to have him on the ball a bunch in their base stuff, even when they match up base to nickel, that puts that defensive end, if that's Jadeveon Clowney or whoever, that puts him head up over the offensive tackle in a four technique or maybe a little bit outside shade in a five or in a four eye where he's a predetermined pinch. And so they're not great places to rush the passer from.
Oh, man, that's deep. that was Mark Schlereth, right? It was going through all that. So just to share a little bit about what he's talking about. When you're in a base defense, the first thing that happens is there's a gap integrity. And so everybody has a gap. It's not always the best place to rush a quarterback. When you go to a nickel, you usually widen your ends in that situation. There's less of a responsibility in the run game. It's more of a reaction to the run game. And so I would agree. When you're in a base defense, you're not always in the best position to rush the quarterback because you're thinking run first is usually the premise on that. So I would agree to an extent of it. It's really a complicated piece that he went through in how their alignment is and whether they're in a pinch or whether they're in a five or a six technique out wide. I just think we need to be more in a nickel because it allows us to blitz more. It allows us to play more man-to-man. It gives way more options for the defensive coordinator. I just have a limited playbook when I'm in my base defense. It's mostly zone, or I've got to help in some certain man situations because I got a linebacker walked out on a slot, a third wide receiver. That's just not a good matchup. So I'd agree with some of his points there, and I would like to see us run more nickel or more five defensive backs. I think you can be more successful in the passing game.
Well, Paul, I'm always against taking linebackers off the field, but
there should be linebackers on the field.
No,
they should all be hybrids,
now.
Dave.
Okay, well. Let me ask you this, though. Do they have that guy, though? With the people that they have there, who do you think that's on the roster right now that's the best nickel guy? Because that was really the issue, right? It was more about Jamar Taylor and that Michael Kendrick was a little bit better than him. But, yeah, it made him much more predictable as far as having to run zone.
Well, I think a lot has to do with, you know, do we get Quentin Dunbar back, which, you know, that's a loaded question there. So I'm not sure how it plays out. Maybe it's Blair. Maybe it's Amadi. I think either one of those would be a good fit. I think Blair would be a fantastic fit because the one thing that they worry about by putting that extra defensive back is in the running game. I mean, it's real. I mean, their first thing is let's stop the run. Let's make them go into, you know, more passing situations by getting the second, third, and long. Well, if they go out with, you know, three wide receiver package, Whether that's an extra tight end or just one tight end or two running backs, let's just throw the three wide receivers in there, what most people are familiar with. You have to match up with that. If I don't match up with that, I pretty much know it's zone, and it's a check with me offense. If I see KJ Wright or whichever linebacker walks out on the slot wide receiver, the number two receiver usually in, I'm going to check with me. I'm probably going to throw the football. You know, if all of a sudden he's, you know, slid inside, they're just, the offense at that point gets to dictate. And so that's why, to me, you have to be able to match up. I think Blair, they would be comfortable with him in the running game as well as the passing game. So I would give my nod to him, and I know that's a little bit off the wall.
Hey, Paul, we talked yesterday about the rating system from Bill Barnwell. He went through every team out there and ranked them in terms of what they've done in the offseason, free agents, draft, all of that good stuff. He had the Seahawks at 26th in the league. And he broke it down, basic reasons why, and reaches in terms of draft picks, and hey, the Dunbar thing may not turn out. We'll see what happens. No Clowney at this point. How would you rank them? 26, too high, too low? What do you think?
Well, I you know how I feel about rankings. You know, that's a beauty pageant. You know, we're all, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and we don't often know what the Seahawks are trying to accomplish. The Seahawks do not share their needs, right? And they leave that up for us to all guess and have great shows and talk about. I think they've addressed a lot of things they want. I think our offensive line is much improved. We've got depth across the board. I think, you know, Dunbar is a big piece. I mean, if all of a sudden he's not a part of that, we got some scrambling to do. I think they shored up their linebacker situation. I was concerned about it. I don't know where to rank them. I think we're a better football team, and that's what I look at. We are 1 yard away from winning the NFC West and having home field advantage, or at least having a home game that the next round. You know, to me, we're not that far away. So did we get better? Are we more competitive moving forward? I think so. So I don't know where that number should be. You know, it's probably not 26. It's certainly not number one. And a lot of that has to do with salary cap. It's so easy to be a lousy football team, have two picks in the top 15, have $50, $60 million of salary cap, and say we had a great off season. Well, yeah, you better, because you were lousy. You know, the Seahawks are already pretty good. To me, they just need to add a few pieces. I think they've done that. And I don't think we're done. I mean, this whole, you know, coronavirus has certainly hurt teams, you know, bringing in players that were injured at the end of the year. And it's why we haven't seen Clowney. It's why we haven't seen Cam Newton signed yet. Until they can actually get in front of a doctor, go through a workout and a physical, you know, they're not, I don't think they get signed.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Paul. You know, last year they were inches away from being the NFC West champions, the Seahawks, that close to San Francisco, and they beat San Francisco down there in overtime. Do you think in light of the offseason that both teams have had so far that San Francisco has pulled a little farther away, or do you think it's still a small margin between the two teams?
I think, look, San Francisco lost some players. I think they did the best they could at securing what they needed to do. I think they still, while they lost, you know, some on the defensive line, they brought in a rookie that I think is going to be a very good football player for a long term, but he's not going to be what they lost. I think they tried to do some things, but you're relying on rookies now, right? They drafted a wide receiver out of Arizona State who's a rookie. They lost a veteran wide receiver. Those are hard to replace. I still think Garoppolo is what he is. I think his ceiling is right where he is right now. I don't think he improves. I'm not sure he gets much worse, but I think you know exactly what you're going to get from him. So everybody else has to step up. But I think, you know, look, San Francisco is going to be a very good football team. Arizona, I think, took a step up. I think we're a better football team. I just, you know, I need Dunbar to come back and play. Although we can have another discussion about that. But I really think offensively, on the offensive line and what we have in tight ends, I think our offense has a chance to be really dynamic. Did our defense make a huge jump? No. But I'm hoping the young guys, we can improve a little bit. I still think this offense is going to have to be the team that, or the side of the ball that really drives this team, and we're going to expect them to be a top five offense, I think, this year.
Paul, I asked the question earlier about Quandre Diggs and his impact on this defense. We give him a lot of credit for this defense looking completely different when he was there. He played 5 regular season games, 2 in the playoffs. And this team averaged allowing 24.9 points per game during the season. In the games that he played, they allowed 24, 9, 30, 28, 24, 9, and 28. So if you average it out, the number in terms of the points allowed, no real noticeable difference. Turnovers definitely went up. Not that he's responsible for all of those. I guess my question is, do we give him too much credit for the defense being completely different when he was there, or is he like Clowney in that he does a lot that doesn't show up on the stat sheet, yet he has a definitive impact on what the defense does out there?
Well, I guess I would say, well, it's really volatile, the Seahawks. And you're talking about 9 points, 9 points, 30 points. You know, I guess I want to see what the median is, you know, more than the average. I think he was an upgrade for us. I think he didn't get a chance to play, you know, certainly in the offseason, preseason, and get comfortable with everybody. And look, you veterans are really important in the secondary, and I think they counted on them to add some stability. I think he's a really good player. He's not Earl Thomas. He's not a guy that's, you know, going to completely change the course of the Seahawks defense. I think he adds to what we need, and that's good football players. And he's certainly one of them. I think McDougald, I think the guys that we have, the second year guys, have got to step up. And if we do, I think we have a chance to be pretty good defense. And I could also go say, Bob, if we don't get Collier and Blair and a bunch of these second-year guys that we really are counting on that were all made the team, we had 10, 11 guys make the team last year from the draft. If they don't step up and make a huge jump, then we take a step backwards. That's as simple as it can get. But if they do, and I think they can, you know, I think we have a chance to be a fun defense to watch. I don't think it's a top 10 defense. We're just not dominant enough on the front four. You know, we're not a San Francisco that can just flat out rush 4 guys and that ball's coming out. But I think we can be good. I think we can make teams work hard, and I think we can, you know, cause turnovers and create opportunities for our offense to be, which I think, again, is going to be a very, very efficient offense this year.
Paul, we always appreciate it, man. Stay safe out there in Dallas. Enjoy your family, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. Sorry we didn't get to talk as much as normal.
No, we appreciate you battling through it with us. There you go. Paul Moyer, great job by Mora and DJ picking up the slack when the technical difficulties hit all of us at the same time. Hey, high school athletes in our region and across the nation had their sports seasons or even careers cut short by COVID-19. And 710 ESPN Seattle wants to recognize them. So if you know of a local team or athlete impacted by this crisis, then use the hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes. That's hashtag 710 Hometown Heroes on Twitter or Facebook to share their story and why they're your hometown hero. Coming up, Adam Kaplan of SiriusXM NFL Radio is going to join us to discuss his report of the Seahawks offering a deal to running back Devontae Freeman. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Get a chance to talk some football now with a man who, frankly, I don't know how he has time to even speak with us. I'm looking at his Twitter page. You can hear him on SiriusXM NFL, Fox Sports Radio, 953 WDAE, 957 The Game, Sports Radio 810, Flag Football Podcast, Inside Birds. Adam Kaplan, how do you have time to speak to us?
Guys, good to talk to you. Look, radio's been my career and also television with ESPN, and I do play-by-play for the American Flag Football League, and I'm still reporting a lot. I mean, yeah, you know, I'm doing it. Look, we all got to make a living, man. That's the way it
yeah.
is.
Yeah, you. That's quite a work ethic you got there. We appreciate you taking some time with us. What can you tell us about the offer the Seahawks made to Devontae Freeman, perhaps what they offered, maybe what he's looking for? What do you know?
Yeah, so I'm told that a couple weeks ago the Seahawks were in touch with Devontae Freeman's agent, and they made an offer a couple weeks ago, somewhere around $3 million in cash was what I was told. NFL Network said it was around 3 million plus upside to 4 million, which that typically means is that there's some kind of bonuses built in if he for production or being healthy or being on the, you know, the game day roster every week, and he can make more money. But what it tells me is basically what I've known since day one. They're looking for depth at the running back position because, as you guys know, their top three backs went on IR last season, and they need someone with experience behind Chris Carson. They're looking for someone who started before, and that's why Devontae Freeman makes a lot of sense. But the one thing about Freeman we should talk about, we need to mention, this guy's had significant injury issues over the last three seasons. And that's why Atlanta moved on from him. You know, he signed a lucrative extension 3 years ago, but he just has not been able to stay healthy. What he does offer, though, not only insurance behind Carson, but he does catch the ball better than Carlos Hyde, who's another guy that is on the radar.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Adam, about Carlos Hyde. So where are the offers for him? Because they were drafted the same year. He was a little bit higher draft choice. And then also, you know, you mentioned the injuries with Freeman and everything. Where are his numbers or offers?
Yeah, I do not know the exact numbers they're talking to him about. But I know, talking to Eagle sources, the Eagles are looking to offer just over the veteran minimum. Miles Sanders is their starter. But I think with the Seahawks, the way that they see it there is you're going to see more of a committee at the running back position. Chris Carson's clearly their starter. Where in Philly's, Miles Sanders won't be sharing the ball very much, so they're not be willing to pay as much. The Seahawks clearly are willing to pay good money. It does surprise me, though, that when I had learned a couple weeks ago that they were looking at $3 million, that's a lot for a backup running back. By the way, and he turned that down, Freeman's side, the agent turned it down. You were looking, they would have made Freeman the highest paid backup running back of the National Football League, as I understand it. That's just, I don't get it. Look, we've got time here. We're only in May. It doesn't have to happen now, but they're really talking to teams around the NFL when they're looking at the backup running back market. The two guys they're looking at are Freeman. Teams are looking at Freeman and Hyde, and after that, not very much. I talked to Isaiah Crowell through DM a couple weeks ago. He said he's recovered from his injury from last year. He missed all of last season with the Raiders. Shady McCoy's out there. He was inactive for the Super Bowl for the Chiefs. There's just obviously Marshawn. And that's not much left there. So it's either kind of Freeman or Hyde, or there's a drop-off.
Hey, Adam, I think we've gone 47 shows in a row talking about Jadeveon Clowney, and we haven't talked about him yet, so in my attempt to get to 48 in a row, I'm going to ask you a question. Because you reported that the Eagles weren't interested in Clowney unless it was $10 million a year or less. How do you think this whole thing is going to sort itself out?
Yeah, so let me just kind of, you know, I'll explain that, because I don't think people really quoted me correctly, so let me just explain something. Talking a lot of teams about Clowney, there are a lot of teams that would like to have him. But here's the thing that Clowney's got to understand. A lot of teams fill their defensive end need in the draft. Like, before the draft, he had a lot of leverage. Because he's coming off of sports muscle surgery, which was done here in Philly, he just has this injury history, and now we're past the draft. The clubs have the leverage. Now, I had a GM tell me that I'm not allowed to say the team, but I will tell you that there's a team out there that was willing to pay him probably around $15 million per season over a two-year average of $15 million. Well, that team wouldn't do anywhere close to that now because they've addressed their DM position. This team happens to still like him, but they're not looking to do it, pay him a lot of money. And when I said the Eagles, all I was saying is the Eagles aren't interested in the player at all. But if his agent, Bus Cook, called them as willing to give him an offer they couldn't refuse, and I gave an example of $10 million maybe, then maybe they might be interested. Because the Eagles are definitely, they're open to looking at the defensive end position, but Clowney, the problem is his injury history. It's just, there's no other way to get around it, and you know, Clowney knows this. He's not getting the kind of offer that he wanted, and quite frankly, you know, the Seahawks made him a pretty good offer back in March, and obviously they're not going to give him, they wouldn't give him the same money, and that's why there's nothing going on with the Seahawks. I don't know the exact number, but I wonder if he might have regretted not taking that offer.
Yeah, you just answered my next question, which is, would you have any idea what they potentially, we heard that they made the offer, not really sure what neighborhood they were in, though, but it sounds like you don't have
the league was, it was somewhere between 16 and 18 million a year. I've not gotten that. A couple people said that to me. I never got a completely confirmed. And then obviously the guaranteed money is so important for this player due to his injury history. Because if you're the Seahawks or any other team, you've got to be able to get out of the contract after a year. You just have to. You or very little guaranteed money in year two. Because he just is, you know, you start way early in his career with microfracture knee surgery and so many different injuries. It's just never been about talent with him. It's been about staying on the field, and that's why he's still available. I'll admit it, I did not think he'd still be available at this point, but once you get past the draft, leverage goes with the clubs.
He might be the busiest man in football. He is Adam Kaplan of SiriusXM NFL, Fox Sports Radio, and about 12 other places. Adam, we really appreciate you cutting out some time for us. Thanks so much, and hopefully we get a chance to catch up again soon.
Guys, thank you.
There you go. Adam Kaplan giving us a little insight into the offer made to Devontae Freeman. Coming up, Josh Gordon is applying for reinstatement to the NFL and has made it clear he loves Seattle. So do you want him back? You can text into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We're going to talk about it next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We touched on this earlier as well with John Clayton. Josh Gordon is apparently still in Seattle. He's going to apply for reinstatement to the NFL. He's made it clear that he wants to be back in Seattle. He posted a video of himself catching passes yesterday and tagged his location in Seattle today. Mike Florio reported that he's in the process of applying for reinstatement. And, Jim, you asked me would I want him back. I have a definitive yes because of what we talked about earlier. Yeah, he's gotten in trouble multiple times. This is not a new thing for him. But he's never been a bad guy. He's never been a guy who's hurt anybody. He's never gotten into fights with teammates or been a divisive figure in a locker room like Terrell Owens or been a bad teammate. His biggest victim has been himself. He's a guy who deals with a disease. He deals with a dependency issue. He's dealt with some, some areas of depression as well. So he's obviously it's been an uphill battle for him. He's stumbled many times, but by all accounts, his teammates loved him. The coaches loved him. He was not a problem. So knowing that his heart's in the right place, it's just his body and, some of those urges that he can't curb. He's a guy I root for, and he's incredibly talented. Dave talked about that pass that, one of the best he's ever seen. One of those receptions that he made was one of the best he's ever seen. I mean, I think he's an incredible talent who can't get out of his own way, and hopefully he's found the right path now, and I absolutely want him back on this team if it's possible.
Yeah, I do too. He seems like kind of a sweet, nice guy. Victim of his own problems. Man, you look at his I guess the feeling here is like, can you try to catch a star in a bottle or whatever that phrase is? Because you look at what he did in 2013 when he was all pro, 1,646 yards and a 19-yard average. And he scored 9 touchdowns that year with Cleveland. So in 2013, who was throwing him the ball then? Was that Johnny Manziel or... I'm not even sure, but you look at his, all of his splits. I mean, you look at his career, it's just missed season, violation of the policy, and then switches teams a couple of times, and the guy's got 4,200 yards in receptions and 20 touchdowns and, like a 17, 18 yard average. He's fantastic, but I feel like you're not going to be able to count on him. Like his CIFCO rating, that hopefully we're all familiar with now. Can I bleep and count on him? That's very low. You just kind of have to accept that. That's what you're getting with this guy. But, man, he's spectacular. And that catch, like I said, he caught the back half of a 55-yard pass, back half of the ball. So, yeah, I'm okay with bringing him back. I would just say, look, don't get too attached to him because it just seems like – and this might be one of those guys, Jim, where, Pete earlier said, yeah, sometimes I'm too optimistic. And a lot of times coaches have that sort of father syndrome where they think that they can bring a guy in and, turn him around and, get him right. And I love Pete for that. And I hope he is able to do that, but I'm certainly not going to count on it.
Well, it's a good point about Pete Carroll bringing him in, maybe being overly optimistic. We talked about C.J. Procise maybe being one of those players too. But, yeah, well, I got mixed feelings on Gordon. I'm wildly talented. Five suspensions in 8 years. Last year in December. So you're getting excited about what this guy could bring to that offense here in Seattle. And we saw the third down catches. They were moving the chains almost every time he made a catch. He only had seven catches for 139 yards. You talked about that fantastic catch he made in Carolina, but his other catches, I mean, he just so effortlessly catches the ball, too, no matter where it is. You don't have to hit the guy right in the numbers. I mean, he just goes down for it and just a fantastic player. And I don't exactly know how this is going to work, but last year he was suspended for performance-enhancing substances and substances of abuse. And now they've changed it in the collective bargaining agreement where you can't get suspended for marijuana use anymore. So if it's just a situation with marijuana, that bodes well for him. If it's PEDs, you're still going to be suspended. There's different stipulations with the PEDs. So I don't know which it is with him. If it's just pot, then, yeah, hell's bells. Just bring him in and add him to Lockett and DK and Dorsett and Moore and Ursua and Freddie Swain and get the competition going, I guess.
Well, the problem is it was both, Jim. We don't know what the substance of abuse was. Everybody assumes it's weed, and maybe it was, but the league is not allowed to say what it was. So everybody speculates. Could have been weed, could have been something else. But it seems like it's two different infractions. So we'll see PEDs versus substance of abuse. Well, it was both in this case.
Okay. All right, Dave makes a good point, though, because, yeah, okay, do you get so caught up with his talent that you forget about, I mean, what if you're just cruising along with Josh Gordon September, October, November? Oh, man, he's back. He's like the guy. He's like he was back in Cleveland in 2013, or he looks somewhat similar to that. And then all of a sudden, something like this comes up, because this happened in December last year. And I know he wasn't a huge part of the offense, but what if he is this year? That'd be a letdown. It'd be disappointing. It'd be a lot of different things that wouldn't be good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a risk. I mean, I think our Paul Gallant, who's part of our morning show, Danny and Gallant, was arguing that a roster spot is too valuable to risk with somebody like this that's been as consistent in these mistakes. And I don't think he's wrong. I think, but if you're talking a roster spot for one of these receivers that you're going way down the depth chart on versus him, he's worth that risk, because I think he is decidedly better than anybody else on that in that receiving room other than DK and Tyler Lockett. I think there's a big gap between Josh Gordon and Moore, Josh Gordon and Dorsett, Josh Gordon and Ursua, Swain, any other name you want to throw out there. I think you're talking about a big gap in experience, obviously, and talent. And so to me, that's worth the risk of a roster spot.
Well, but then, you know, then the reliability comes in, and that's a huge factor. I mean, you have to count that with this guy. And so, you know, and I always say this, that coaches, they will keep players that make them feel comfortable, that practice well, that are reliable, that they know what they're going to do. And, you know, you're missing that. And at some point, I feel like with Josh, that down the road, you're going to have to pay the piper, and it might come at a really bad time. So getting rid of a guy that you think, like, let's say it's John Ursua, and I think you think, man, this guy can be like a Doug Baldwin type. If we just give him a little bit more time and get him in here, and here you got a guy that is willing, and he just is like, yeah, I'll do whatever you want, coach, and, you know, I'll learn it, and I'll come in early and look at film and everything. And he's not nearly as talented as Josh Gordon, but Josh Gordon is, you know, you just don't know what you're going to get from him. And if history is any indicator at all, you're likely that he is going to go, did you say five suspensions in 8 years? I mean, that's a pretty high hit rate, man. So those roster spots are pretty valuable. So, yeah,
I was thinking
I kind
David
of agree
Moore.
With Gallant. What do you mean?
I would put him in his spot. You haven't seen Ursula. You don't know what you have. I agree with you. Got a young guy who could possibly be really, really good in this offense. I feel like we've seen who David Moore is, and I think he's a guy. I think he's depth. I don't think he's special. I think he can do some things, but I don't think he's a guy that makes a massive difference in how good this offense runs, where Josh Gordon can be a difference maker.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a 60% chance, based on his past, that he's not going to be here. So, you know, that's the part, you know, you go into the season and, you know, David Moore has, you know, I think he takes a lot of hits and a lot of, you know, sort of criticism, but, you know, he's made some good plays. I'm not trying to say that, you know, I think he's in line to be the number three receiver or anything like that, but, you know, he does a pretty good job on special teams. I think Clayton mentioned that, and I think it might be one of those situations where at the end of the year you go, man, I wish I had David Moore back, because, you know, I hate to think the worst of people, because I don't want, you know, I think Josh Gordon's a nice guy, and, you know, he's trying, and he's, like you said, Bobby's a victim of a disease, and, but, man, it's just, you know, with a football team, you just have to be able to rely on guys week in and week out. And, you know, for Russell, I mean, it was like, hey, go get me some superstars. Well, that guy's a superstar, but the price you pay is the risk that you just don't know when he is all of a sudden going to not show up to practice.
All right, coming up next, one of my all-time favorite segments on this show. It is What We Learned, and it's coming up next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn.
Because knowledge is power.
I feel like today was a big learning day, especially when all three of our lines dropped simultaneously. We learned that DJ and Mora have our backs and can pick up the slack seamlessly. That's what we learned right out of the gates. But outside of that, what did we learn, DJ?
Well, outside of that, we learned why people didn't really approach Dave when he was a player in the NFL.
Dave, a couple of people weighing in on the text, and you guys can text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Busy Hard Seltzer text line, when you were talking about, you know, being a superhero on the field, and then you could just be anonymous off the field. The 360 says, you look like Norman Bates. Who would approach you?
Well, that was my nickname my rookie year, so... Yeah, I've had people tell, like, my wife, like, you know, I wondered why I didn't have a great game with the ladies and things like that. And she's like, well, you were kind of scary looking. So, yeah.
Dave, I feel like you're like me. I've been told more than a few times that if I'm not smiling, I look like I'm angry. It's just... that, you know, yeah. It's just that face that you, it's just the way my face goes, and I think you might suffer the same affliction.
Well, I don't think my wife thinks I'm ugly, but I think it's more of like a, yeah, like, why do you look so serious or deranged, perhaps? That might be what it is, but yeah.
Deranged.
Just didn't have like a, you know, very welcoming, you know, expression.
Yesterday, we felt like we had to tell some of the listeners what a phone booth was. Do we have to tell listeners who Norman Bates was?
Yes, you might have to. Some of them, yeah.
Is that Psycho?
From the movie right? Psycho, Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, Tony Perkins.
Yeah, Anthony Perkins. And I told my mom that when I was a rookie. And she goes, being the great mom that she is, Carol Wyman, she said, oh, well, Anthony Perkins is actually a really handsome actor, David.
He's just scary and unsettling. That's
thanks,
awesome.
Mom.
That's awesome. What else did we learn, DJ?
We learned that Jim is in support of Jerry DePoto.
I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, yeah, DePoto's right. Yeah, you know, I hadn't thought of it like that. He's right. I got to stop whining, and I need to get my uniform on and get to the park. I don't think that's going to help. But, you know, far be it from me. I mean, I'm always saying things I wish I could have worded differently or not said at all. And, in fact, I've done that with
some
DePoto,
to Jerry DePoto.
Yeah, I know. So, but I love that. You know, if Jerry was here with me right now, I'd try and keep my 6 feet, but I'd want to give him a virtual hug.
Wow. Well, I don't think it'll make a difference in our relationship with him as it pertains to this show and you, but I'm sure he appreciates your support, Jim.
and thanks for your non-support there, Bob. That was really nice.
I support you, Jim. I just think he's got a wall up. I just think it's an impenetrable wall.
That was really funny, Bob.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Yeah, I wish I could take that question back. There have been a few times in my career where I wish I could take things back, and I can't, but oh well.
And somehow we survive without him. It's okay. What else did we learn, DJ?
We also learned Dave is not a fan of the possible replacement for the onside kick.
When the owners vote to have a 4th and 15 instead of the onside kick. What do you say, John?
I'm
what
on board.
Think?
Let's do it.
I mean, are you?
Yeah,
let's
I am.
Let's go. All right,
yeah,
John. Okay.
Yeah, because yeah, it's a 4th and 15. It'll be at the kickoff team's 25-yard line. And if you make it, then you still get to keep the ball and try to do the best you can.
You know what my response to that is?
I knew that was coming.
How do you really feel about it, Dave?
I think when I get back in the studio, that's not going to be cool to do with the COVID-19
yeah,
regulations.
Spreading germs around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but, yeah, I just drives me nuts, man. Like, the whole safety thing. Like, can't you just suspend safety for one awesome play that has been, you know, just gives people a chance? And I know we're a little bit more jaded here in Seattle because – because of the, you know, the NFC Championship game in 14. I mean, that was the reason why that they – I bet you that guy who should have fielded it for the Packers wished that that had been not been the case. But, yeah, I mean, can't we just, like, put – first of all, it's not a safe game at all, ever. It's never been a safe game. But why can't you just suspend that for one awesome play that gives a team a chance to get back into it? And it's still a pretty small chance, even with. But, I mean, I, to me, all that is so phony by the NFL. It's just stupid. I wish I was the commissioner. I would just be like, this is the one where I'm not even going to ask for a vote or anything. I'm just going to reinstate the onside kick. Okay, I'm done.
Well, and you said it before. I mean, the reality is, how often do we see that play in a season? What did you say? 8, 9, 10 times in
well,
an entire season, maybe? And then... But yeah. I think you're right. It doesn't happen often. B, how often do you see guys get injured on that particular play?
Right.
You really
Thank
don't.
You.
I mean, it just seems an odd play to address with the safety concern because it's treated as if, man, this is a high-risk play. We are suffering injury after injury every time this play is run. And it's just not true.
No. Yeah, it would be interesting to go back and look and see if, you know, if there ever have actually been any injuries. But, yeah, it's just weird to me. And Clayton is very, like, dogmatic about it. Like, well, no, they already did this, and he just can't see it any other way, which usually I agree with Clayton, but that one frustrates me. So I had to give him the raspberry.
Yeah, I like it when you give the raspberry, but don't you think a 4th and 15 play would be kind of cool? And you can only
no.
do it twice in one game.
No.
And if
no.
you're unsuccessful, okay, Dave.
Stupid.
What if you take what if you take the team that's on defense and they're laying the points and you're in field goal range if the team that's on offense 4th and 15 and they don't get the first down, you're in field goal range, Dave. Right away.
Why would you just all of a sudden just throw this weird little rule out there that, you know, like it doesn't have anything to do with the flow of the game. After a score, you kick the ball off. So now all of a sudden, let's line up on the 20-yard line and all take our pants down and turn our helmets backwards. And it's just stupid.
That would be pretty funny to watch, but I still want to see the kickoff. What else did we learn, DJ?
Well, we learned that there is a Tom Brady documentary reminiscent of The Last Dance coming out in 2021, but we learned why there's only 9 episodes instead of 10.
You guys know why there's only 9 episodes instead of 10?
9 Super Bowl trips?
No. Because the 10th episode will be about this year in Tampa Bay, and they didn't want to show that. Just like they didn't want to show Jordan with the Wizards.
Oh, Jimmy. Nice guy, Jim. Why do you wish so much ill on Tom Brady?
I don't know. I don't know what makes me think like that, you know. And I was going to say, well, I got a hanging curveball, and I couldn't resist, but no one really hung a curveball. I just threw a curveball to myself. And
it's because Brady's cost him a lot of money over the years.
And you admitted that was part of it. That was part of it. And I've been burned by him every time I pick against him. I feel like I end up on the wrong side of it, but it actually cost you money.
I just, as much as I don't really want Tom Brady to have a poor season there in Tampa Bay, there's a part of me that kind of hopes that he does, just so that people can say, man, Jim was right about that. Tom Brady at 43, he just couldn't get it done anymore.
Yeah, I don't want him to succeed. He's in the NFC, but I'd like him to succeed enough to have it be entertaining, to see, all right, what's this guy going to do? Wow, he's still got some gas left in the tank, even without the brilliant mastermind that is Bill Belichick. I think it could be a pretty compelling story. If he falls on his face, then it's not that, I don't know, not that compelling of a story.
Do you think Brady, this thing is going to be even close to as interesting as the Jordan thing? Because Jordan, I think what they captured out of him is that he's a petty, competitive, kind of a bully, but you love him anyway, whereas Brady's just kind of a nice guy. I mean, I think a lot of people think there's some dark side to Brady. I'm not sure if there is. And I liked that there was that with Jordan. That was more entertaining.
Well, and we saw that because of the access that they had. I don't know what kind of access they'll have had for this Brady thing, but if they had that same level that they had with the Bulls documentary, I think it could be pretty compelling, and maybe we do see sides of Brady that we didn't know existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll watch it. You know, the thing about the Jordan documentary, it just came at a time when people were just dying for, you know, watching something that was different than all the reruns we've been seeing. So I don't know. That won't be the case with Brady next year. But, boy, the greatest of all time, there'd be a lot of people tuning into that.
Did we learn anything else, DJ?
That is all we learned today.
All right, good stuff. Our thanks to John Clayton, Paul Moyer, and Adam Kaplan for joining us on the program. And a special thanks to our buddy DJ and Maura for jumping in when the whole ship went down. They kept it afloat. If you missed any of today's show, head to the podcast page, 710sports.com. Click the podcast button, then scroll down to our picture and click on that. And everything you missed each and every day is waiting for you right there. We're back tomorrow right here with Bob, Dave, and Maura on 710 ESPN Seattle.
I'm protecting naked 60-year-olds.